coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
Swords, dragons, and swords. Game of Thrones, the final season has returned, and we are highlighting the biggest moments of this dragon-sized premiere.
Plus, we've watched Guava Island, and we'll share our thoughts about the tropical fable featuring Donald Glover, a.k.a. Childish Gambino, and Rihanna.
All of that, and but of course, it's the big sell as well, right now on Inside Pop.
Hey y'all, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop, and we are your deep dive inside the world of pop culture.
If you are an Apple Podcast user, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and even review our show. We truly appreciate it. Thank you in advance. It means a lot to us and hopefully helps other people find our podcast.
So Amita, did a girl watch the season premiere of Game of Thrones?
Oh, you know it. You know we watched it. You know we couldn't wait to record this episode. And you know, I'm telling you now, there are spoilers and we don't care because it's been a couple days since it premiered and this is going to happen for the next couple weeks. So you've been warned. Let's dive in.
Let's go. We came in with high expectations, as high as a dragon flies over Winterfell. That's how high our expectations for the season one premiere of the final season of Game of Thrones was.
Oh,
general question, Amita, were your high expectations satisfied?
Oh, yes, and then some. Like, I was obviously into all of the buildup. All of my friends and family were all talking about it. We're all very excited. I'm sending dragon and sword and wolf emojis left and right to everyone. it was everything I wanted, so much so that as soon as it ended, I watched it again.
That is a loyal fan. You are not playing around.
It's not even that. I just loved it. I just was like, I want to relive that again.
I love that. So you're going to have tons of insight and double viewing things to share with us.
This may happen again and again every week, guys. But yeah, I mean, let's start at the very beginning. It felt like this fun reunion show. All of the Starks, they're finally in one place. I couldn't handle it, you know? And there was like, where's Arya? She's lurking somewhere. But bring her. I need everybody to be in one room. It has happened finally, but like, I needed more love. It's okay. It's all right. I'm okay.
Amita's going to need a moment, people. It was actually as excited as you sound, as we are. Can you ever recall a final season premiere having this much media hype and just general fan apoplexy? Like, can you remember being this excited for any final season?
That was a wonderful SAT word. No. I really can't. You know, I'm thinking of like the finale of Breaking Bad. Yes, yeah. There was hype. Mm-hmm. Everybody was into that too, but it wasn't at this level at all. Yeah. I really can't think of anything in the recent times that was at this peak level that I'm texting multiple people throughout the evening.
Right.
Like, you know, excitement.
And I feel like the executive producers who y'all are going to go down in history, if you keep this up, you two are going to go down, Weiss and Benioff, as creating one of the greatest series of all time, because I feel like they're telling great story. They're also pleasing the fans. Like, I feel like starting at the very, very beginning, that new title sequence was definitely making all of the nerds like you and like me be like, okay, wait, I've got to watch this five times because I know there are clues in here. Completely new title sequence, which must have cost $1 billion. But like, did you see that the wall has a little hole in it, that we're in the crypts of Winterfell? So I think like right away that they're saying, we're bringing it this final season, we're giving you clues, like we've upended the world and we're going to show that right away in the title sequence.
Yes. I thought the same thing. I was just like, okay, they shelled out some money to redo this open. But then they started in the most epic way. Troops, soldiers marching in, and this amazing shot of Jon and Daenerys riding in, so regal, owning it, loving it. everybody watching them, everybody questioning it, everybody hating her. And then those dragons showed up and it was like, mm-hmm, yeah, we here.
And, you know, I mean, it did remind me. And you know what? I think it was even one of the actors said, oh, you should rewatch the first season. And I didn't get a chance to do that. But, you know, having not seen the first episode of the series in 8 years, I remembered this other march into Winterfell, which I think this march definitely echoed. Remember when the Lannister, well, no, actually it was, well, some of the Lannisters, but when at that point she was Queen Cersei, she became Queen Cersei again. But yes. Remember when they marched in to Winterfell and Bran and Arya were kind of scurrying about to try to see who was coming in and to kind of check out that majesty. Yes. I love how that was echoed again in this season. Uh-huh. It's like the, you know, and that went so well that first time. So I think it's just going to go just as well
this time.
Right. Yeah.
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 And I mean, we could skip to the ending because then they ended it also with a callback to season one, and I was like, oh my god, everybody's in Winterfell.
Okay, yeah, we're gonna, okay, let's skip ahead because that is such a great callback. So as we all know, in the very final episode in the very final scene of episode one, it's a history lesson, honestly.
I know.
Little Bran, who loved to scale walls, pokes his head into the boudoir of Cersei, and she sees her being boned by her brother. And Jaime Lannister, that cad, just walks over to the window and boom, pushes him out to what he thinks will be the kid's death. And then in the final episode of this season, you see...
The final scene of this episode,
you see Bran, like, again, with that great dispassionate, I'm not even really among you, I'm just here as a three-eyed raven visitor. But Jaime's look of recognition, amazing.
Amazing. I think it was my look as well. Like, I was like, oh my god, wait. Holy crap, they haven't seen each other and since he pushed them out of the window. And I was like, holy crap, I didn't expect this to happen at all. And I didn't like put two and two together that this moment would happen. And now what's going to happen? I don't understand. And then when Bran had said earlier in the episode, you know, I am waiting for an old friend. I didn't, because obviously he sees the future. I didn't know who he was talking
Neither
about.
Neither did I.
First.
Neither did I.
Oh, it was such a good, the kudos to the writers of this episode.
Yeah, I think I don't know who I thought. I think I thought maybe he was talking about, I don't know. I think as everything was happening so quickly in the episode, I heard the line. I wondered who it was. I started to figure it out. But then right away, Bran was telling Sam that he had to tell John that John is the actual king. So like you're kind of ripped away from that thought and like you're put propelled. Let's talk about some of our other favorite reunions, because I feel like episode one was definitely about, so over the course of 7 seasons, you've seen all these characters interact, be treacherous with each other, support each other. Many of them had not seen each other for, in some cases, 7 seasons. So what was one of your favorite, or do you have a favorite reunion?
I loved, there's good reunions and bad reunions. And I think a really good one was Arya and Jon Snow. Oh, I love that one so much. Mm-hmm. By the tree. It was perfect. And like, he was like, oh, you still have the sword. And she's like, it's needle. It was perfect.
Yeah. And one of my favorite lines was when he asked her, you know, have you ever had a chance to use it? And her answer is like a very deadpan, once or twice. So good. Such smart, clever writing.
So good.
Yeah, that was great. I think that was so nice because, like, again, we wanted... Like, I remember the Jon and Sansa reunion I thought was also perfect because you just knew how much they had been through. And that was 2 seasons ago. And it was warm in a way that those two had never been warm with each other. I think this reunion, like, everyone was just dying for it. And on Twitter, I think got more tweets than anything else. People just love those two characters so much. And my feeling is together, they can kick more ass than anyone. You know, and so Yeah, it was. I think it was done so well because it was super sweet and heartfelt, and you basically got to see a warm side of Arya we haven't seen in 7 seasons, and only John can bring that out.
No, but speaking of warm sides of Arya, who's ready to ship Arya and Gendry? Let's just talk about it. I'm excited.
I know
she might have her first kiss. Let's let it happen.
I know we're supposed to ship them.
I want to ship them so bad.
You know what? I guess for this entire time, I was thinking of Arya as kind of asexual. Like, I don't know if I do. Does a girl need a love interest?
Does a girl need a love interest? No. But clearly there is a connection. And I'm ready.
You want it.
To see her. I want her to blush a little and have a little, you know, a little smile here and there. Because she did when she saw Gendry.
I don't know if I want that.
Okay. Well, time will tell. 6 more weeks. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. But you want her to have a love interest.
It doesn't have to be anything that's fully fleshed out. Mm-hmm. It could honestly just be like a moment. Okay. And I just feel like that would, I don't know, it would just make me happy.
Okay. Okay. No, no, no. You're totally allowed to do that. I think I don't want a love interest just because I don't need Arya distracted. I need Arya and Needle. I need her to be focused on killing people.
That's true.
She still has a couple of people on her list. FYI.
Uh-huh. She faced one of those people on her list and didn't even kill him.
Well, see, maybe she wasn't focused. She was thinking about Gendry.
Oh, that was good. I will say, to keep going with the reunions, one of the not so warmest reunions, but one of the best conversations was Tyrion and Sansa. Oh,
so good. So good.
So good. My favorite line from that interaction was, "Many underestimated you. Most of them are dead now."
Every fucking line is so good. And then another great line is when Sansa, you know, I like it because, listen, Sansa cannot deny that when she was in that hellhole known as King's Landing, Tyrion was the only one who showed kindness and respect to her. So she can't deny that. And I think the fact that she's remaining on the balcony with him is a sign of that. But I think he loves to see that she's grown into something and survived all the horrors. But I love, love, love when she says, "Oh, so you really think that your sister is going to come help us because she said so?"
I know.
I used to think you were the most clever man in the world. And then exit stage left.
Oh, it was so good. So good. Burn. Such a burn.
Such a burn. You know, I have to say, I feel like it is people. I think people are saying it's like some people are saying it's the best first episode, you know, first episode of a season episode of Game of Thrones history. I'm going to say this is the shadiest episode in Game of Thrones history. Amita, who knew that Weirwood Tree cast so much shade in Winterfell? It was shady all over. Best shade, though.
Shade-tastic.
Best shade?
Yeah.
Dany and Sansa.
Yes.
We're jumping around, people. We can't help but we know you've watched, so follow us. Come along with us.
Please.
Stay on our trail like some dire wolves.
It was so wonderful when everybody was confused as to who to call your grace, who to say my queen.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sansa kind of right away, just also big ups to the actor who plays Sansa Stark. What's her name?
Sophie Turner.
Of course, she's going to be Dark Phoenix. Sophie Turner, amazing delivery, which just like with the way her eyes went down then up again. And when she says, you know, "Winterfell is yours, my grace," she's not bowing the knee. She's not smiling. She's going to give just enough. Listen, there's shade in Winterfell and there's very little warmth, literally and figuratively. And just like the iciness and the... it's so well done. Of course, Dany gets to volley back a little bit when Sansa in a big hall meeting says, "Well, what do dragons actually eat anyway?" And then Dany beat, pause, whatever they want. Which is a threat, which is a fact, which is a retort. I think it's the first time she speaks in that hall meeting. So, you know, so I think the writers are saying, listen, we're all here for a common goal, but there isn't automatic unity and kumbaya.
I like that they did that. You know, I think it was important for them to continue this tension between the Lannisters and the Starks and the Targaryens. And but then, like, there's all these other moments that, like, you forget all of the plot that they went through in the last two seasons, because we've discussed this before, how they really sped up some things in the last couple of seasons, and they feel like they've sped things up in this first episode. But I was here for it because I was so excited for more reunions and more people to reveal things, like skipping again, the sweet and loving Samwell Tarly. Raise your hand if you have just love and you want to just give Samwell Tarly a big old hug, because when he meets Dany and she says, oh, your father is Randall Tarly? Oops, awkward.
I had forgotten about that. Did you remember that? I remember she burned a cutie, a Westeros hottie, but I had forgotten that was his brother.
Yeah, brother and father.
Right.
Like, oh, okay, well, my dad's dead. That's all right. My brother will be there. And then it was just like, nope, killed your brother too. It was so terrible.
But,
and Samwell is in front of his queen and trying not to break down entirely. But it was, oh my God, my heart went out to Samwell.
I know. There was a part of me that where I thought he was, that would have been out of character, so that would have been bad. So I'm glad I'm not a writer on Game of Thrones. But there was a point when I thought when he left, he was going to actually smile, because his father was an ass.
Yeah, and he acknowledged that. He was just like, all right, well, that's okay. At least my brother will be there.
Right.
Then, unfortunately.
And then Sam had another huge moment, maybe one could argue the biggest moment of the first episode, where he tells Jon that he is actually the rightful heir to the Iron Throne. And we were talking about this offline, Amita. You were thrilled and pumped your fists in the air, because this happened in the first episode, not in the fifth one or the fourth one, but right away.
No. So I legit just screamed yes, fist pumping, throwing, as soon as he started to reveal this information, because I really didn't think it was going to happen in episode one. I didn't know when it was going to happen. And then can we all just take a second and look at Jon Snow when he hears that information? Go back, watch the episode. When he hears that information, he is shocked. And then he like has this extra look because he's doing the math and realizing that the woman he's sleeping with is now his aunt. They are well smitten with each other. Oh, so smitten that they need to take a whole new world Aladdin carpet ride on dragons. So I'm really going to do like a supercut of that to that song.
Oh, yeah. Someone should do that.
I will do it.
Okay. Well, since you brought that up, can I say that I absolutely loved this episode? The Aladdin carpet ride was the only thing I didn't love about the episode. And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I did not like that. I felt like it. Oh, okay. This kind of goes into what my bold... So we're going to give bold predictions about what's going to happen in the future. This kind of goes into my bold prediction, but it was so long, first of all. And I'm like, the time you're spending showing the dragons flying very beautifully could be time maybe that you could give to a Brienne and Hound reunion. Although that's coming, probably next week. But for me, John, in my mind, John getting on the back of a dragon and riding it successfully, in my mind, this was going to be a huge moment. It was a moment that maybe showed that he had Targaryen blood. It was a moment, you know, the first person to ever ride a dragon other than Dany. I didn't want it to be a rom-com moment, and it felt kind of rom-com to me. And it just took so much of the episode's time. And I'll say this, in that scene, I felt a little bit less of a Jon and Dany shipper. I'm like, do I want you two together? And let's get into that later, because that's part of my bold prediction. But what did you think
of it? Well, I mean, that dragon definitely doesn't. That,
that was
death
the best.
Stare was amazing. P.S. Just a side note, guys. If you guys have followed Leslie Jones on Instagram, she's always really good mm-hmm. with recaps of things. And she's got this incredible energy. And she posted at least like 6 videos just giving commentary during scenes of the premiere episode of Game of Thrones. It's amazing.
Love it.
So do yourself a favor, have a good laugh, and nod and snap along with her when she gives her commentary to the first episode.
Love it. Love it. Love it. So that was the only moment I didn't like. But listen, I think the writers are so brilliant. And that actually just might have been for the fans. The fans might have said, you know what, this is all awkward, intense reunions. It's like there's a lot of dense storyline unveiling going on. Let's actually give you a beat and just enjoy probably the best dragon CGI of the series so far. So maybe that was it, yeah. Just to kind of like give us a little bit of a break. I think I'm just so hungry for things to continue forward that I was a little frustrated, but I get it. And it looked amazing. So yeah, I think the only part that I didn't love, but everything else I loved, just even that really frightening moment when they discover that young lord of Umber.
Oh,
is it the House of Umber?
Yes, Lord Umber. Oh, my
so
God.
So that was suspenseful. Then it was sad. And then it shocked
the
hell out of me.
I so jumped. I saw the blue eyes, but I still jumped.
And I read online. It was interesting that you know that there was a, like the body parts formed this kind of spiral.
Yeah.
I can put the link in our show notes, but we've seen that spiral before many, many, many times. So there's a theory that spiral means something. So when the first White Walker was created, there was like a spiral shape of stones. The dead have placed other dead bodies in a spiral shape. So that spiral has some kind of significance, and we've seen it a number of times over the 7 seasons.
Yeah, I will say the only things that we're lacking from this episode is we didn't get to see White Walkers and the Night King.
Yeah.
But we know they're coming. It's okay.
Yeah.
And I was severely missing Brienne of Tarth because I love her so much. And I know she'll be coming back, but I just wish with everyone else that we got to see in Winterfell and elsewhere, I was like, one more.
Yeah.
Bring her back.
I mean, we see her for a very, very quick moment. Did you notice her? She's in that meeting, the big town hall.
Yeah, I know, but like, come on. Like, she doesn't get a line?
No, she doesn't have a line, but we see her, which was good because it reminded me, like, oh, right, she and the Hound, just the way Arya and the Hound, again, a good written reunion. But yeah, I think their reunion is not going to be it's not going to be a couple of lines of dialogue that satisfy that reunion. I can't wait. But yeah, Brienne of Tarth, hopefully a lot of her. You know what? Here's a prediction. Not so bold, but here's a prediction.
Yes.
She may be the absolute only person in Winterfell who will speak for Jaime. We see in the coming attractions that Jaime is essentially put on trial. He basically walked into a place where everyone hates him. That would be like, I don't know, like Donald Trump walking into Park Slope, Brooklyn. I don't know, like everybody hates Jaime Lannister. And I think Brienne of Tarth, bold prediction, semi-bold, Brienne of Tarth pleasing Amita Patel will stand up and speak very passionately about why Jaime deserves a chance. Prediction.
Ugh.
While everyone else
I like
is saying off with his other hand and off with his head, she will speak up to defend him.
I like this.
Yeah.
I think this is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait for it.
Yeah. But also great. Okay. I mean, I just feel like, I think they were all great actors. I mean, some of them were kids and had to grow up to become good actors, which is always gut-wrenching. But then I think, like, the actor who plays Jaime Lannister, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name, Nikolai. I call him Nikolai. He I think has always been a good actor, but I feel like there's no way that you can be on a show like this for 7 seasons and not improve. So just, you know, just the look and the recognition and the revelation on his face when he sees Bran. Great acting.
So good. So, so great. And also, can I give a shout out to Little Lady Mormont? She's
my favorite. The best. Oh,
she is my favorite.
Okay. The best line. The best line in the series. And they're all great. I keep saying everyone's the best line. But when she stands up and she looks at Jon Snow, who she supported, right? He had to win her respect. She said, you left Winterfell a king and came back. I'm not sure what you are now. That little girl brings a parasol with her and throws shade wherever she goes. But it's true. It's
so
true.
Much shade.
And the thing is, okay, so Amita, you're obviously Team Jon Snow. So am I. So are all of us. But I do feel like it's not just meant to be funny, but she is actually making us question, is Jon Snow making... He hasn't always made the right decision. He's always meant well. He's never not meant well. He hasn't always made the best decisions. Is he making the best decision right now? That's what I'm... Lady Mormont helped me to question this.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think Lady Mormont started the episode questioning that. But then now he has all of the cards because he now knows his true heritage. So he has to speak up and now change the game. Will he do it? That is the question.
Okay. So I have a couple of bold predictions I'd like to make.
Let's go to predictions. I can't wait to hear this.
This is a bold prediction, and it's also kind of what I want now. And you, please call me an evil person after you hear this, if you feel so inclined.
Okay.
I think that scene that you loved where Dany tells Sam that she executed his father and brother.
I don't love it. It broke my heart, but yes.
Yeah. I think that when Dany finds out that Jon has a rightful claim to the throne, that line that Sam says to him of, you know, you are willing to give up your crown for your people, would she do the same? I feel like that one line, that question, is going to define her for the rest of the season. I think she does have some crazy Targaryen blood, and I think that she has basically spent the past 7 seasons and basically all of her life, her only reason for being was that she believed that she was the rightful heir to the Iron Throne. That's what she cares about. She's started to care about other things along the way. I don't think she's going to be very happy. I think this love affair between the two of them, and I think that dragon scene flying, is supposed to make us really just love their love. I think their love, bold prediction, here we go. Spit it out, Sean. Their love will not survive the Game of Thrones, primarily because Dany is not going to be happy and not supportive of Jon's. He's not even going to claim it, but he's going to say, I have a right to claim it. That's going to break them apart. Prediction.
Not that she's his aunt.
No. I don't think.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. For some reason, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like there's so much more to worry about. I think she's not going to be happy about it. And I think, so my bold prediction is, in a nutshell, she's, Dany and Jon are not going to remain in love. And there's going to be a very, very large, dangerous rift because of his claim for the throne. And she might go a little Targaryen. I think she's going to go a little crazy. And then the big question is going to be, can Tyrion, can Jormund, can they pull her back to sanity? Because she does waver, that Targaryen crazy.
Yeah.
What about you? Do you have any bold predictions, Amita?
I guess my biggest prediction will be the tearing apart of the Starks. I feel like they're together, but Sansa and Jon, I feel like they are not together. They are not on the same page. And I feel like there may be a divide.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And I think Arya, surprisingly, I love that Arya and Sansa continue to be a united front. But, you know, Arya trying to remind Jon that don't forget she's your family. And guess what? They're still family. So they're first cousins. That's still family. And they grew up as brother and sister. So they are still family. Don't forget that, Jon Snow. Yes. Amazing, amazing. Okay, so here's my last question for you, Amita. And we can do this every time we talk about Game of Thrones. So like for the next 6 weeks, or so that'll give us two more times to talk about this. Putting you on the hot seat right now.
Okay.
Who will claim the Iron Throne?
I am a loyalist to Jon Snow. I think he will claim it.
Interesting.
Who do you think will claim the throne?
Dramatic pause. No one. Ooh, my theory...
Which is very... I see that theory clearly, actually.
I don't think there's going to be one person sitting on the Iron Throne. I'm not sure what that means, so I'm kind of cheating. But I don't think there's going to be one ruler of Westeros. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm probably wrong. But there we go.
I am probably wrong too. We'll see. They know how to throw us a curveball every 5 minutes on the show. So we are looking forward to the next episode. And then the sad ending in a few weeks.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. I know that so many of you were as excited as we were and continue to be about Game of Thrones. So please, let's keep the conversation going. Make sure to tweet us at Pop Insiders and let us know what you think about our predictions and our recap, and share yours with us. We want as many theories as possible to float around in our brains because we can't get enough, and next Sunday is too far away.
All right, well, we'll have more after this short message.
Hi, it's Ali Kokesh, one of the cast members of Mission to Zix, a new addition to the Max Fun network. We're blown away by the welcome we've received from Max Fun listeners, telling us you've discovered the show and are binging it hard, supporting us during the drive, and just being rad humans all around. Mission to Zix is an improvised, obsessively sound-designed sci-fi comedy epic following a group of ambassadors as they explore the ass end of space. I play Dar, the 12-foot-tall omnisexual security officer with furry scales, chest talons, and a series of flaps and chutes that are for... Yeah, you know what? You'll figure it out. We'd be delighted if you joined our crew aboard the aging sentient starship, the Bargerian Jade, as we travel the Zix Quadrant, meeting all sorts of weird aliens played by brilliant guest comedians. That's Mission to Zix, ZYXX.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
Another exciting pop culture event that happened this weekend was Coachella, which is in Indio, California, and tons of artists were there performing and having a great time, including one of my favorite artists, Childish Gambino, aka the multi-talented Donald Glover. He had his debut at Coachella this weekend, and in anticipation for it, he also told everyone that he had this movie coming out. I was like, what? What is this? It's called Guava Island. It was on Amazon Prime. It premiered Saturday at midnight, right after he performed on Friday. And it was this interesting island fable starring Rihanna and Donald Glover. I was like, what am I getting? I don't know. I'm excited. I'm here for it. I love both of them. They're going to act together. They're going to sing together. They're going to have... what am I going to get? I didn't get what I thought I was going to get. Rihanna did not sing. Rihanna barely danced.
Barely.
It was sort of, you know, there was musical moments, but it wasn't a full musical. Which I wasn't mad at, but then the musical moments felt a little bit more sporadic and then felt a little out of place in some places. And the music, I will say, was interesting because it was most of the tracks from his EP from last year. So I just felt like a little discombobulated by this whole thing. And I had huge expectations for it, obviously, being a fan of all of these artists. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know what the thing is? I thought about this this morning when I was thinking about what am I going to say and how do I feel about Guava Island? So I feel like there are times when I'm thinking for some reason about Janet Jackson's Velvet Rope. And, you know, she would take her time between albums. And so there was at least 2 years that went between Janet period and Velvet Rope. And when it was time for Velvet Rope, her first single was Got Till It's Gone. And, oh, also between Rhythm Nation and Janet period, the first single was That's the Way Love Goes. Mid-tempo, chill, not a big extravaganza, not a huge video that cost $1 million, right? And I think in both cases, it worked because the songs were so amazing. Got Till It's Gone, famously my favorite Janet Jackson song of all time. One of my favorite songs of all time. Ditto, That's the Way Love Goes. But, you know, like, not a banger, right? And so I think there's something that's incredibly confident about having high expectations and then releasing something that defies expectations. And that's kind of quiet and chill, but superb, right? And how quiet and chill it is. So I was thinking, like, why, so unlike That's the Way Love Goes and Got Till It's Gone, why didn't I love Guava Island? Why did Guava Island feel like it disappointed me? And because there were so many things I liked about it. I liked the fact that Rihanna, who's one of the biggest stars in the world, who you want to see sing and dance, I liked the fact that maybe she had this little acting challenge to play someone who is restrained, who is a little bit uptight, who is a little bit tentative. So I thought, that's cool, right? Defy our expectations. We don't need to see her dance. We can do a little shimmy with Donald on the bridge. So that was cool. But I feel like beyond the intent, the execution felt a little sporadic to me, right? Like sometimes it was weird, right? Like all of a sudden we got a new version of This Is America. Yes. And I was like, oh, I like this because it's kind of weird. And all of a sudden he's not Danny anymore. He's Childish Gambino, like making those crazy faces. And
yeah,
but I'm like, but why? And why is this the only time this is happening? And
right.
So I think I wanted it to be more consistent, if that meant consistently inconsistent. But like, either give me like music videos that pop up a la Lemonade, or make it more of like Purple Rain, which I've read is one of Donald Glover's influences, but make the music performance and not like this magical thing where people start dancing to music that couldn't actually come from anywhere. So it just felt like, yeah, I wanted it to be weird as hell, but it wasn't. Like, it was so normal at times. Then it got weird. Then it got super normal again. Then it got a little bit of sappy. And so it just felt inconsistent to me. Amazing moments, but inconsistent.
Yes, yes. And I love Donald Glover so much. I think he's an incredible musician and singer, and he's a great dancer and actor as well, and writer and creator, you know, and I do love everything he does. I just felt like the same thing. It felt a little short to me. I give credit to Hiro Murai, who directed it. It was this cool, beautiful, sun-soaked, you know, 16-millimeter look. And so I felt like I was in some type of time capsule on an island, which was really fun. And it was beautifully done that way. But other than that, like you said, I just felt like This Is America felt a little odd where it came in. And then, you know, the random songs here and there. And I just was like, not a lot of new music. It was a lot of the tracks from last year. I figured if he was going to put this out in anticipation of Coachella, we'd get a little bit more new stuff, you know? So there's just like, I was just like a little confused more than anything. And a complete side note, Letitia Wright, who was one of the best parts of Black Panther, was barely in it. And I was like, you're really just squandering this one wonderful actress. And then I was really just like, when am I going to see her again? When am I going to see her again?
But it does make me think about expectations, right? We had huge expectations for Game of Thrones. They satisfied us to no end. Guava Island, unsatisfying in many ways. So that's the theme of the this episode, I guess. But yeah, but it makes me think about how pop culture does do that to you, right? It raises your expectations and then it has to meet them.
I'm not going to hold this against Donald Glover. He tried something different, as he always does. And we'll see what he comes up with next. And that's about it for me on Guava Island.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it's okay, right? It's okay to be a fan of someone and to say the latest thing you did didn't please me. But yeah. And the thing about Donald Glover is he's done such an amazing job that I almost hesitate saying it didn't satisfy me, because my first thought is, oh, well, I must be missing something. I must be dumb today, because how am I not recognizing his brilliance? But, you know, not everyone bats 100. Sports metaphor for you.
Love the sports metaphor.
All right. Well, tell us what you think about Guava Island. Are we missing something? Are we being haters? Do you agree with us? We'd love to hear your thoughts. Anything that you want to celebrate about that work, we'd love to hear it. Please let us know at Pop Insiders. And there's more of the show, though. It's the big sell, of course. It's coming up right after this very short message from another one of our Max Fun podcasts.
Hello, this is Amy Mann.
And I'm Ted Leo.
And we have a podcast called The Art of Process.
We've been lucky enough over the past year to talk to some of our friends and acquaintances from across the creative spectrum to find out how they actually work.
And so I have to write material that makes sense and makes people laugh. I also have to think about what I'm saying to people.
If I kick your ass, I'll make you famous.
The fight to get LGBTQ representation in the show.
We weirdly don't know as many musicians as you would expect.
I really just became a political speechwriter by accident
of realizing that I have accidentally pulled my pants down.
Listen and subscribe at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcast.
It's like if the guinea pig was complicit in helping the scientist.
Welcome back to Inside Pop.
It's now time for the big sell. It's the segment in which Amit and I take turns recommending something from the world of pop culture to the other in hopes that they love it as much as we do. In our last episode, Amita Patel recommended a one-on-one interview on YouTube called Core Conversations, featuring Tan France, one of the Queer Eye hosts, and Mandy Jacinto, an actor from The Good Place, both Asian American. Well, no, that's not true. Tan is British. So both Asian talent performers talking about being Asian and talented.
Yes. And you know what? I embraced it. I applaud it. You don't see enough of it. And that's why I shared it.
Yeah, I love when you share those things. And honestly, let me just take a moment to be sincere and say so many reasons why I appreciate Amita's friendship and her co-hosting. It's because, listen, we come from, you know, different backgrounds, different experiences. We agree on so many things, as you may have witnessed in the past 45 minutes. But, you know, I think it's amazing, Amita, when your eyes are open and your ears are searching for just other things just naturally, as are mine. And then we get to share this stuff. So I love, 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 love that part of our podcast.
Me too. So what did you think of this conversation?
There's so many rare things about this video. Seeing two Asian men talking very openly about being Asian, working in media. Seeing a straight man and a gay man sitting down talking to each other, I feel like that's rare sometimes in life, sometimes in the media. And I think so it was just all refreshing. And I can imagine how even more refreshing it probably was for you, Amita, being Asian yourself, to see that. Right. I can complain about a lot of unjust things in the world, but the one good thing that does seem to be moving towards a better world for people who crave more African-American representation is that it's happening. There's so many rising number of great African-American performers and shows and movies. And so I think that's happening with Asians, but y'all have some catching up to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We do. But I think conversations like this, the opportunities that people like Tam France and Manny Jacinto and Jamila Jamil and, you know, all every there's so many now, which is great that I can't even name them all. It's happening. It's slowly building. And therefore, conversations like this can be had and can be interesting. And people are fans of these great guys and ladies, whenever, you know, I've sold, you know, Jamila Jamil as well on this podcast, you know, and it's nice. It's inspiring. And I wish I had this when I was younger, but I'm happy for all of the young, you know, Asian boys and girls out there to have it now.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the two of them are really interesting, different, you know, representatives. And I think that's the thing. It's like, you can't, like, you have no choice. Like, you have to be a representative. And like, in some ways, if mm-hmm. you're Manny Jacinto or if you're Tan France, you have to be a role model. And I think for both, it's interesting for me. It was interesting kind of both of them are still, I think, new at this, and you could kind mm-hmm. of see that. And I think that's really interesting. Like Tan France, I feel like he's definitely like, he has his story to tell, which is really interesting and inspiring. And I think he's, you know, he was a little repetitive in the interview, and I think he's just, you know, he's finding himself. He everything he says is under a microscope, and I think he wants everything he says to be taken seriously. And so I think he's building that public persona. And I think Manny Jacinto, dude, you're a star now, and I think he has to get used to that. But at the same time, where's his next role coming from, right? Like, that's, I think, the question. Mm-hmm. And I think they talked a little bit about that as well. So, yeah, really, yeah. really interesting conversation.
Yeah, I would love to see this conversation in 5 years, to see where they've come, to see how far they've come, you know, or maybe not, and to see what they have learned in, you know, since they are at a certain peak right now and what they did with it, and then coming back together in 5 years to talk about the ride.
And will Tan France continue to flirt with Manny Jacinto in 5 years?
That's my yes.
question. That was the only thing. I was like, okay, Tan, we get it. You think he's handsome. Like, so he does it at the beginning of the interview, and he does it again. And I was like, okay, we get it. You're gay. You think he's handsome. I mean, in some ways, I thought that's cool. Like, a gay man can do this now. At the same time, like, again, I was just like, okay, like, what else do you have to say? But that's just like a micro criticism. Yeah, but I think it'll be 5 years from now. Like, they should do that. Take your advice and have this conversation in 5 years.
Well, what rating do you have for this conversation?
I am going to give this conversation 3.25 stars.
I love it.
Really,
thank you so
yeah,
much.
Illuminating window into the lives of other people. Always worthwhile and interesting and inspiring. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I am curious to know what you have for me this week.
This week, I have some music for you. I have some music for
yes!
you. So you may have heard us once or twice mention this other podcast, Our Sibs from Another Crib, Jojcast. They're this really, really, really great British podcast. They talk about pop culture, husband and wife, Joe and Jay. And they recently released a Spotify playlist of new music that they're digging in 2019. And
oh my God, yes.
I love their musical taste so much because they know about music that I've never heard of. And then I start listening to it and I love it. And it becomes some of my mm-hmm. favorite music of that time period. We also share a lot of things in common. REM, mm-hmm. Radiohead, they love Jamila Woods. So we have a lot of things in common, but I really get excited about the new stuff they introduced me to. So basically, I'm going to share their playlist with you. They created a playlist called Jojcast Picks for 2019, and it's long. It has, actually, no, it's not crazy long. So it's 42 songs, but
that's awesome.
Yeah, so listen to it on your way to work, on your way home. Just listen to it over the next couple of weeks. I haven't even heard all of it, but I've heard a couple of songs, and we can talk about those songs next week, where I'm like, thank you, JoJcast. What would my life be like if I hadn't heard these one or two or three new songs? And there are a couple of names I see here, like Karen O and Danger Mouse. I just read that they did an entire album together. And so they have a song from that album on there. And I'm really excited to hear that. I haven't heard it yet. There's a Jamila Woods song on here. Some bands I've always heard of, but have never really heard the music.
I'm super excited.
I think it's going to be a really cool musical experience for both of us to experience. I've already started to, and now you can join me and we can talk about it in our next episode.
Yeah, I'm super excited to listen to this. And I wonder if there's any artists on there that I also know, because we share, like you said, we share similar music interests, and then to discover a new one. So thank you for this big sell.
You are welcome. That link to that Spotify playlist will be in our show notes.
Oh, that is it for us. This conversation can stay alive and well on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Pop Insiders. Head over to our Facebook page, Inside Pop Podcast. Go to our website, insidepoppodcast.com. Let us know how you're feeling about Game of Thrones, about Guava Island, about new music you're loving, any big sales you have for us. We love it.
And we're planning some great things for you for our next episode. Most likely, more Game of Thrones talk. We'll see if any of our big, bad, bold predictions came correct. And so much more from the world of pop culture. It's all coming up on Inside Pop.
What is dead may never die, but kill the bastards anyway.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.